The guards then did a forensic examination of your home.
Yeah.
Now, talk to me about that. Did they tell you they were going to do it and why they were going to do it?
No. First I knew, I drive a lorry for a living. I was up in Abbeyfield in County Limerick when I got a phone call basically informing me that they had a warrant and they already had the lock barrel at my front door. That was the first I knew.
And did you ask them what the basis for the warrant was?
No.
Why they got a warrant?
No, because, I would have opened the front door for them anyway. I would have given them the key to enter anyway. So, it's all part of the investigation, you know, part of the job.
Why do you think that they sought a warrant? I mean, if you would have been that open to them, and, okay, I take, okay, you drive for a living, and I understand you can be away for a day or two at a time, is that right?
Yeah.
You don't always come back in the evening. But they had your phone number. They could have called you and said, Richard, we're going to come and have a look at the house, or... Yeah. Well,
I suppose the reason behind it all is legality for themselves. They have to cover themselves. Like, I suppose if they entered the house and they found something untoward or something, I suppose they wouldn't have been able to use it if they didn't have a warrant. I don't know. I don't know the circumstances.
Were you surprised that they went for a search warrant, though?
I was surprised when I got the phone call saying it.
And did you come back then straight away, or what did you do?
No, I left them to the job because, as I said many of a time, I've got nothing to hide. I've only spoke the truth.
Yeah. So I suppose, man to man, you know, I mean, I think we're probably around of an age. But if I was away with work and heard from the guards that they were searching my house and my wife had been missing, my first instinct would have been to get behind the wheel and drive home and see what was going on. Did that enter your head?
Well, it's like I keep saying, I've got nothing tied. So if I go down and I'm impeding the investigation somehow, I've left the guards basically do what they want.
You wouldn't be impeding the investigation by coming down and having a look.
Well, like I say, the best thing for me is to try and leave the guards do what they're trained to do.
Did you even ask them why they felt it was necessary to search the house?
No. I made... I spoke to certain members of the Gardaí after the search of the house and stuff like that, but...
And what, did they tell you anything?
Well, no, I got the phone call saying it fitted a new lock barrel to the door.
At what point did you decide down the road, okay, we need to bring this man to justice? Or was there a long pathway down?
There was a long, yeah, because our family, like, you know, obviously we're the victims, you know, so it's going to destroy us, but it destroys the rest of the family. It destroys even beyond that, like, you know, his family, his sisters, his brothers that live in the town. It affects everybody. So it took a long while to get to where we are today.
What age were you when you decided, Amy, I have to tell someone? Who was the first person you told?
Well, I can't remember the very first person I told. Maybe might have been Mam. But this is the thing. It's like, I think Mary Crilly explained it to me before. It's like you put yourself in safe mode to survive.
Yes.
So you try and block out bits and pieces to just kind of get on with life. Yeah. So, like, details like that are a bit sketchy for me now.
Can you remember who you told first, Melissa?
First person I told was my best friend,
right,
Gillian. And then the second person I told was my mum.
And when you told your mum, how did she react? Your friend was obviously shocked and horrified.
Yeah.
But how did your mum react? It had been happening under her roof in her house.
I suppose Mam just didn't want to believe it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of like, I suppose at the time I was wild myself. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I was acting out from everything that was happening with me.
Yeah.
So I suppose from that, Mam just probably thought it was just another part of me again. Do you know what I mean? It took her a while to actually come around to believing.
How was their relationship, Amy, your mom and your dad? Was he rough with her?
Very. He, you know, the controlling didn't stop there. Like, it was just, he was the same with her as he was with us. You know, he had full run of that house. You know, there was a lot of shouting. There was a lot of slapping. You know, obviously the abuse. It wasn't a nice place to grow up.
Yes. So, after you told your best friend, Melissa, and then your mum, and you can't remember, Amy, who it was you first told, you decided then to try to get some justice. Who encouraged you to come forward and seek justice?
Well, I went to the guards when I was 16.
Okay.
And I made a statement.
Right.
And, but like that, then I was confronted with mum and dad to take the statement back because dad would lose his job and they'd lose the house and we'd be living on the side of the street. And so that's kind of when it kicked off for me.
Maria Lennon, good morning.
Good morning, PJ.
And I never knew about this, and I only saw you conversing about him last night. So you've never told this story?
No.
So fire
and
away.
I'm only telling it because I totally trust you, PJ.
All right.
You're my old friend from UCC.
Okay. Tell, first of all, people might know you if they've ever been up to Black Rock Observatory and they've seen the film there in the control room. That's you. So that's the familiarity that might be, some people would have. But take the story up wherever you want to, Maria.
Okay. Well, I first met Harvey, 25 years ago. Mm. Almost. About 20 to 25 years ago. At the time, I was living in Dublin. I was in Lily's Bordello in the library, if anybody is old enough to know what that means. And I was having a drink with friends, and it's quite dark in that area. And the next thing, a bottle of champagne was sent over to my table. Now, I couldn't see who sent it, so I sent it back. Mm. And then 5 minutes later, another bottle of champagne came over, and I sent that back. And then eventually, a well-known actor who is currently on television here in the UK came over to me and he said, Maria, stop sending the champagne back. I'm with Harvey Weinstein. He's producing the film I'm doing at the moment. And I went, oh, sorry, I didn't realize it was you. But you know what? I'm sending this back because he sent his minion over. He didn't come over himself. Show me who he is. I looked over, and I saw Harvey, and I said, fine, send it back. And then 5 minutes later, Harvey himself came up to my table, grinning that I had the guts or whatever, because he's used to people fawning all over him. And, hi, I'm Harvey. Why did you send the champagne back? One, I don't know you. Two, you're a control freak. You're buying everybody drinks, and you're drinking Diet Coke.
Right.
So he wasn't used to that, as it were.
Yeah.
And he's charming and charismatic.
Yeah.
And that makes it all the more difficult to say certain things that I... Well, as you know, you've known me since I was 18.
Yeah.
And I've never made this... A few close friends always knew. And within the industry, it's an open secret. And that's why, you know... with the best will in the world, and Meryl Streep is a very fine actress, and so everybody knew.
Mm. Did he go away then, or did he try to go further?
Then obviously we got talking. I was doing some filming in Dublin at the time. He asked for my number, which of course I gave him. You wouldn't do otherwise. This is before mobiles. And, you know, he would leave charming messages on my answering machine saying, doing Arnold Schwarzenegger impersonations, going, I'll be back next time I'm in Dublin. I will look you up. I then moved to London for work. And again, I would meet him. He would invite me to screenings. It's a pretty standard story here. What happens is you get invited to various parties or screenings, and then eventually it proceeds to, oh, come to my hotel. I'd like you to have a look at the script.
I'd actually booked a scan at about 12 and a half, 13 weeks, because I was obviously conscious that I was 37 and there was miscarriages in my family. My mother had had quite a few. So we went for a private scan in Dublin. And unfortunately at that time, they told me that the baby had probably died at about 9 weeks.
Oh God.
So at that point, then they sent me to Holles Street. And that's where sort of it gets really difficult because... Sorry.
It's okay. We have all the time in the world.
You're obviously in the maternity ward.
Mm. Okay, take your time.
And so you just have to be really strong. Yeah. And it's really hard.
And you're surrounded by other women.
Absolutely. Who are in their element, you know. And at no point do you want to take any of that happiness away from them. You know, so you don't want to be upset because... You don't upset them either, you know.
But your world is falling apart.
Absolutely. So you just take strength from somewhere. I don't know where it comes from. And you kind of do what your mother always told you to do and not make a fuss. And put on a smile. And be strong for your partner as well, because obviously they're going through it too. And just wait and find out where you go from here. And with that pregnancy, obviously, the baby had been dead for a few weeks, so I had to go back into the hospital the following day and have a DNC.
Okay.
So, yeah, so that was probably the most difficult because, you know, it'd been so easy, and I'm quite good at what I do, and I like to be really good at what I do, and so it was really frustrating for me as well that how could this go wrong, you know? I put everything into it.
You're a perfectionist.
Absolutely, you know, so, but Mother Nature, I can't compete with her. So, yeah, we have many conversations.
Sure you do.
But yeah, but I came away from there and just went, right, okay, let's fix this. Let's just sort it out.
At what point, Shen, did you then decide we're going to try again?
Oh, basically straight away. I don't muck about.
When it gets to the bit, do you take, well, do you, Amanda, take Jack? Well, you can be heard saying I do, but how does he answer?
No, it had to be somebody independently channeling him, because obviously I couldn't give legal consent on his behalf. So yes, that was another story. We had to find another medium who could connect to him and channel to him. And there's an interesting twist to this one, actually, because the medium who actually spoke for Jack met Jack's best man at the wedding, who's also a spirit, and they're now engaged, and they're getting married in June.
Oh, hang on. The best man at the wedding was another spirit?
Yes.
Okay. A lot of people are starting to ask strange questions online as... Were you talking into Jack's room? But we'll get to that. Who's the best man? What's his name?
His name's Matthew Jackson.
Okay. So now that you're married, how on earth do you consummate your marriage to a ghost?
Right. Well, how it really works is most people, even people that are not mediums, may have gone into. Somewhere where they think it's calling to them, they'll feel energy, because we can feel energy, and we can feel our own energy and we can feel other energies, and every energy feels different. But a medium, somebody who's learned this, will know that spirit can touch your face, your hair, they can give you a hug. Lots of people will have experienced that has gone to a medium, because that is something that mediums do. They will try and let you feel your loved one touch you. So it's in the same way, it's exactly the same thing, except obviously I feel him touching me in a more intimate way. Now, that's something that does take time. Mm-hmm. It just didn't happen organically.
I don't want to get too personal or too graphic for a mid-morning radio show, but
yes.
can you feel that? And does your body respond to that, even though, forgive the expression, there's nothing there?
Absolutely, yeah. As I said, it does take time to perfect, because to feel spirit energy on that level,
your brain keeps coming into it, so you'll get distracted and you'll lose the connection. But I mean, we're married almost 2 years now, so yeah, I mean, we're pretty experienced in it at this point. But yes, I know it's a mid-morning show, but there's nothing, you're not doing anything to yourself. If you are, then it's that's not spiritual sex. It's all about feeling the energy.
Nice. And you're happy?
Yeah, I am happy. Everybody says, oh, well, he doesn't do anything around the house and you still have to do everything yourself. But sure, you know, I mean, you can say that for most of the men of Ireland anyway, you know.